Continuing discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 836, Achintya, inconceivable. This is the third session. In this session, I'm going to be doing quite a lot of reading from various sources. Often we find that when we're just reading, somehow or other it seems more difficult for the hearers to keep their attention, as if compared to speaking more extemporaneously. But we are discussing very serious subject matters concerning the Absolute Truth, who is Achintya, inconceivable. So please don't wander off either by going and not listening to this or by letting your attention wander. Please listen very carefully to the important discussion that will continue. I'm going to discuss Achintya, the inconceivable, which might seem ridiculous. How can we even discuss it if it's inconceivable? Well, even to say something is inconceivable gives some idea about it, then it's differentiated from everything else that is conceivable. So if at all something can be described, then it has something we can latch onto. Here is one sentence from Srila Prabhupada's introduction to his Bhagavad Gita as it is, that is very important or actually essential for entering into discussions of so many topics in Srimad Bhagavatam, for instance, where it's described that the Supreme Lord has four hands. We also hear that Ravana has 10 heads. There are living beings living in the sun, and so many things which is beyond our imagination. But Srila Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, as it is, introduction, we should not reject that which does not tally with our imagination. Very important. I'll read it again. We should not reject that which does not tally with our imagination. In other words, or to put it in another way, the statement of one ancient Greek philosopher, whose name I don't just remember just now, he's not among the most famous. Man is the measure of all things. This is a misconception. Man is not the measure of all things. But that has formed the basis of Western philosophy, the imagination that man is the measure of all things. And particularly that became the standard of the Enlightenment thinkers, which is going on in the world at the present time to a large extent in official academic circles, what we can call the secular humanist approach to understanding everything is considered to be proper, as Swarup Damodar Maharaj, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, reported that he had attended a scientific conference on the origins of life on Srila Prabhupada's order. He was to establish that life cannot arise from matter, life comes from life. But at the very beginning of the conference, the first condition was set that we're not going to discuss any possibility of any supernatural causes. So quite unscientifically, they set various boundaries. Of course, they'll say it's scientific because we can't ascertain that which we cannot measure. But then that presumes man is the measure of all things. Why? Why? I don't believe it unless I can understand it. Unless it appeals to my reason and my intelligence, then I don't believe it's even worth discussing. It's a very arrogant worldview, and one which has dominated the Western world and increasingly the whole world, but it's dominated the Western world for at least the last 100 years, 150 years. Darwinism was a big boost for this. Not one theory, but an approach, the secular humanist approach to understanding the world. Now I'm going to read from a transcript of a talk that Srila Prabhupada gave on Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 31, on November the 18th, 1976, in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada said, "Long ago I was talking with one Arya Samaji friend. He did not believe that a lotus stem can grow on the navel of Vishnu, and there is Brahma born." Everyone says like that. Mythology. It is not mythology. It is fact. So I asked him, "Here we see one coconut tree, and about 60 feet above, there is a coconut, and there is water, and there is pulp, and it's being carried from the ground. Where is the pipe? Where is the pump? How is there water within the coconut? Can you explain?" He could not explain. And I said that even in material things right in front of you, you cannot explain. How will you explain this spiritual position? How the lotus is grown from the navel of Vishnu? Therefore, it should be accepted as inconceivable. Achintya khalu ye bhava na tang tarkena yojiyat. Don't try to argue, it is foolishness, it is inconceivable. Of course, scientists nowadays, they will explain capillary action. Yeah, to some extent they can explain, but why on earth is on earth? There should be anything like a coconut with water high in the air, and then we have to cut it or wait for it to fall down, so and then again cut it so we can drink the water. Why? If we go on asking questions why, we'll find there's no end. We may be able to scientifically explain one thing, but then to explain the cause of a certain effect, if we take the cause as an effect, that the cause must be caused by something else, and then it becomes an infinite regress, unless we accept sarva-karana-karanam. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Reading from a talk transcript of Srila Prabhupada speaking on the 26th of February, 1977. Srila Prabhupada said, "Prahlad Maharaj, tat karasparsha, touch of the lotus palm of Nrisimhadev. The same palm where there is nail, tavakara kamalavarena kam adbhuta shringam. The same palm with naka adbhuta, dalita hiranya kashipu tanubringam. Immediately, with the nails only, the Lord did not require any weapon to kill this gigantic demon, simply nails. Tavakara Kamala. The example is very nice. Kamala. Kamala means a lotus flower. The Lord's palm is just like a lotus flower. The lotus flower is very soft, very pleasing. And how did the nails come? Therefore, adbhut. Tavakara Kamala, adbhut. Nakam adbhuta shringam. It is not possible to grow some ferocious nails, piercing nails, in the lotus flower. It is contradictory. Therefore, Jayadev says, adbhuta. It is wonderful. It is astonishing. Therefore, the Lord's power, exhibition of power and sharp nails, they're all inconceivable. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained, unless you accept the inconceivable power of the Supreme Lord, there is no understanding. Achintya. Achintya Shakti. Achintya means inconceivable. You cannot speculate how it is happening. How in the lotus flower there is such a hard nail that immediately within a second it could kill a great demon like Hiranyakashipu. Therefore it is achintya. We cannot conceive. Achintya. That is Krishna. The very body embodiment of achintya. He is the complete manifestation of infinity. In the Bible also, in the beginning of the Bible, the definition of God is given. He is the Alpha and the Omega. The Alpha being the first letter of the Greek alphabet and the Omega being the last. So we have the same thing in Sanskrit, Akshara. One meaning of the name Akshara is from A to Ksha, from the first letter of the alphabet to the last letter. So everything is included. Everything is within him. He's the final definition of infinity at its beginning, from the infinitesimal up to the infinite, the very embodiment of achintya. Everything we cannot understand. Krishna. You don't understand? It's Krishna. The atheists, especially Richard Dawkins, calls this the God of the gaps. And when we don't understand something, we just say God. Okay, then you understand scientifically, but there'll always be gaps. We'll never understand everything. Even if we become a million times more scientifically advanced than we are now, what will probably happen is we'll find there are more things that we don't understand than we're presently aware of. All contradictions are resolved in him. That's accepted. You may say, well, it's contradictory to say he's the smallest of the small and the biggest of the big. Yeah, that's stated right there. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find Krishna saying, Ami paraspara viruddha dhamashraya. Krishna says, I am the abode of all mutually contradictory characteristics. Yes, he's the kindest, he can be the cruelest. Here's a quote from Nectar of Devotion by Srila Prabhupada. Although Krishna is independent of everyone, out of his causeless mercy, he is dependent upon Garga Rishi for religious instruction. For learning the military art, he is dependent upon Satyaki. And for good counsel, he is dependent upon his friend Uddhava. Reading from an English translation of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jaiva Dharma. In the material world, mutually contradictory qualities do not exist together in the same place, for they would negate each other. It is the inconceivable nature of Lord Krishna's potency that in the spiritual world, all mutually contradictory qualities exist happily together, and the result is very beautiful and pleasing. In Lord Krishna, the qualities of having a form and being formless, being all-pervading and having a form present in one particular place, being active and inactive, being unborn and being the son of Nanda, being the all-worshipable Supreme Lord and being a cowherd boy, being all-knowing and apparently having the limited knowledge possessed by a human being, having qualities and no qualities, being beyond conception and being sweet like nectar, being limited and unlimited, being far away and very near, being completely aloof and also being afraid of the gopis' jealous anger are simultaneously present. These and numberless other mutually contradictory qualities happily stay together in Lord Krishna's transcendental form, in Sri Krishna's transcendental abode, and in Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes. That these mutually contradictory qualities help Lord Krishna's pastimes, making them more beautiful and pleasing, is beyond human conception. Therefore, it is said that the Lord's potencies are inconceivable. All these, why should it be like that? You may say, well, why all these contradictory qualities? Why is it like that? Why should it be? One thing is, the Supreme Lord is not subject or constrained to being within what we can imagine. He doesn't have to make himself what we think he should be. That's one thing. Another thing, because he is infinite by definition, then all possibilities are within him. And here's another very important reason. These mutually contradictory qualities, they make his pastimes all the more relishable. For instance, that he appears as a cowherd boy, and that the mighty Brahma tries to outwit Krishna. And then we have Brahma praying for forgiveness, the mighty Brahma praying for forgiveness to a cowherd boy. It seems ridiculous, but it's very sweet in Krishna's pastimes. So, this statement about how the Lord's potencies are inconceivable, we find in the discussion, which is narrated in Jaiva Dharma, that Rajanath says, is this idea supported by the Vedas? The mutually contradictory qualities. In reply, Babaji says, this is accepted everywhere in the Vedas. And he gives an example from the Shvetasvatara Upanishad, a well-known verse. Apanipado javano grihita pashatya chakshu sa shrinotya karnaha saveti vedyam nachatasyasi veta tam ahur agriyam purusham mahantam. Learned transcendentalists explain that God is the greatest. Purusham mahantam. We may say that the Upanishads describe the Supreme as impersonal, but here we have the term Purusham mahantam, the great person. So learned transcendentalists explain that God is the greatest, the original person. He has no hands. Apani means no hands. But Grihita, he accepts things. So it means he has no material hands. He has no legs. Apani pado, which means he has no hands and no legs, but javano, but he can travel faster than anyone. Achakshu, he has no eyes, but pashyati, he sees. Akarna, no ears, but he hears. So what is to be understood? He has no material eyes, no material ears. He sees everything, he hears everything, he knows everything, but no one knows him. In the Ishopanishad, Mantra 5, we have Tad ejati tan naijati tad dure tad vantike tadantar asya sarvasya tad u sarvasyasya bahyata. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near also. He is within everything, yet he is outside everything. Daily, we members of ISKCON, or followers of Srila Prabhupada, we sing about Lord Nrsimhadev. Bahya Nrsimho, Hridaye Nrsimhaha. Ito Nrsimha, Parato Nrsimha. Here he is, there he is, he's outside, he's in the heart. Verse 8 of Ishopanishad, already quoted in this discussion on Achintya, we'll read it again. Saparyagach chukram makayam avranam asnavirang shuddham apapavidham kavirmani shi paribhu swayambhur yatatatyatortan vyadhach chashvatibhya samabhya. Such a person. Oh, last time when I was discussing it, I took sa to mean the Supreme Lord, but it's referring to a person who's considering the Supreme Lord. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all. This is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, who is unembodied, doesn't have a body, akayam, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher, that's a beautiful term which Srila Prabhupada has given, who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. Elsewhere, in Jaiva Dhamma, well, the same basic section. This is Goswami. I'll say that again. Elsewhere in Jaiva Dharma, there are more discussions of Krishna and his apparent contradictoriness. This is in his pastimes, that in his different pastimes, Lord Krishna appears as Dhirodatta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, and Dhirodatta. So in four different ways, Krishna is a hero. The word hero here is a translation of Nayaka. It translates as hero, that's in dramatics. What's being conveyed is the idea is that he's the central figure in the action in his pastimes, just like was a hero or a nayaka in a stage performance, in a drama. The nayaka is the central figure, protagonist. So here the word hero is not used exactly in the sense of a brave person who does courageous activities. So in four ways Krishna is a hero. Vrajanath asks, what is Dhirodatta? And Goswami replies, as a Dhirodatta hero, Lord Krishna is very grave, gentle, forgiving, merciful, humble, and virtuous in many ways. So what we're looking at here is a very noble kind of character. Then Vrajanath asks, what is Dhira Lalita? Goswami replies, as a Dhira Lalita hero, Lord Krishna is naturally very funny, always in full youthfulness, expert in joking, free from all anxieties, and domesticated and very submissive to his lovers. So that's not exactly the same as Dhirodatta. It's a different kind of personality. Then again, description of the Dhira Prashanta. Krishna's Dhira Prashanta is very peaceful, forbearing, considerate, and obliging. And then Dhirodhata. There's Dhirodhata and Dhirodhata. And as Dhirodhata, Lord Krishna is very envious, proud, easily angered, restless, and complacent. Which seems to... it does, that's the whole point. It contradicts the other descriptions. And Vrajanath asks about this. He says, many of these qualities you have described contradict each other. How is that possible? Of course, Krishna may behave different ways at different times, but Goswami here in Jiva Dharma replies, Lord Krishna possesses all powers and opulences without any limit. Therefore, by his inconceivable potencies, it is entirely possible that he possesses many mutually contradictory qualities, as stated in Kurma Purana. Asthulash chananush chaiva, sthulo nush chaiva sarvataha, avarna sarvata protam, shyamo raktanta lochanaha. He is not great and he is not small. In other words, he's small and he's great. He is the greatest and he is the smallest. He has no color, yet his color is dark and the corners of his eyes are red. Jai, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna. What can we say? Instead of trying to work it all out and having our brains gone boing, we'll just say Jai Shri Krishna. Then again from Kurma Purana. Aishwarya yogad bhagavan virudartho bhidhiyate tatapi dosha parame naiva harya katanchana guna viruddha apyete samaharya samantataha. Because he has all powers and opulences, the Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses contradictory qualities. Even so, there is no fault in this. His contradictory qualities are glorious. We find the word achintya used in Bhagavad Gita to describe the jiva soul. Avyakto yam achintyo yam avikarya yamuchate tasmat evam vidvainam nanushochitam arhasi. Krishna says to Arjuna that the jiva by nature is not manifest. In other words, what we see in this world, the body, is not the jiva. It is achintya, it is inconceivable. Avikarya, it is not subject to change. Therefore, knowing this, Krishna tells Arjuna, you shouldn't lament. Now, Madhvacharya, in discussing this verse, applies these descriptions to the Supreme Lord. These descriptions for the jiva are true for the jiva because he is part and parcel, mamaivangsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatanaha, of the Supreme Lord. So Madhvacharya describes this verse, in relation to the Supreme Lord, that elsewhere we know, and by definition we can understand, the Supreme Lord is sarvagata, all-pervasive, and this is one of the terms used for the individual soul also. Then why is he not visible at all? Because he's avyakta. He's not visible generally. Then the next question may come, how is it possible for a person who is everywhere at all times not being visible? And the answer is achintya shaktitvat, because he possesses inconceivable potency, the word achintya in this verse. This capacity is extraordinary and unique and we cannot imagine it. We can't fit it within our imagination. Then, continuing this discussion, this achintya shakti, inconceivable potency of the Supreme Lord, is there always within him. It doesn't get destroyed. He is avikarya. It's not that, like anything material, it goes through various stages, comes into being, grows, stays for some time, produces byproducts, dwindles and is destroyed. But the jiva and the Supreme Lord are avikarya, they're not subject to this. So his achintya shakti is eternally inherent in him. Discussing the 11th chapter of Gita, in which Krishna exhibits aneka rupa, many, many forms, his Vishva rupa, his universal form. So Madhva Charya says, ekam rupam hare nityam achintya aishvarya yogataha bahusankhya gocharancha vishesha deva kevalam. He is one person having one form, but he has millions of forms. There is no difference between them. How? Achintya, the word is used. Achintya. Achintya aishvarya yogataha. By his opulence of yoga, here used in the sense of mystic power, not the little mystic power that little yogis in this world can do, but his opulence as the Supreme Lord. Quoting another text, Satattva Ratnamala, it states there, I'll just give the English translation, that there are 50 letters in the Sanskrit alphabet, which is a limited number. The Vedas consist of sentences, which are in words, and then ultimately letters. All the letters are finite. And the Vedas, being stated in letters, should also be finite. But the Vedas are infinite. Ananta vai vedaha. How is it possible? By the achintya shakti of the Lord, his inconceivable potencies. So, these potencies, this achintya shakti, his inconceivable potency, is also referred to as amanusha shakti, means it's beyond the level of power of humans. Aishvarya shakti, it is his opulence, his energy of opulence. Duranta shakti, it's far, far from us, even from our imagination. Nija shakti, his own personal internal potency. Aghatana ghatana shakti, he can make that which is impossible, possible. The power to do that. Ananta shakti, his unlimited, endless potency. Summarizing some of these points, this achintya shakti of the Supreme Lord, his inconceivable potency, in three categories. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. He's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. Sometimes he's smaller than the smallest, sometimes he's bigger than the biggest, but no. At the same time and at the same place. And the Madhvas make the point which even Mahalakshmi cannot think of. They're very, very, very concerned to show that Hari Sarvottama, the Supreme Lord is greater than all, means he's greater than Lakshmi also. That's another discussion. Then another way that the achintya shakti is understood, that the Vedas are infinite due to the achintya shakti of Vishnu. Here, this refers not to God himself being achintya, but to the Vedas being achintya. But the Vedas are infinite beyond our imagination because of him. They also give a little qualification here. that the infinitude of the Vedas, or the quality of in being infinite, is fully known, they agree. Okay, Mahalakshmi can know us, and also Vayu. Vayu Jivottama. The topmost jiva is Vayu, the wind god, the air god. Then when we, another point, the third point, when we are unable to explain certain aspects of reality, we may say, well, it's simply inconceivable, but that may be for us, but not for the devatas. That's an important point to understand, because so many descriptions in the Shastra of life on other planets might seem impossible, I mean, because we can't imagine. But the devatas, the gods in the higher worlds, they understand. Now, in the upcoming next few names in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, we have many names which are in pairs of opposites to demonstrate, or which further demonstrate, the principle of the Supreme Lord being Achintya, inconceivable. The next name which comes up is Bhayakrit, he who makes fear. And then the name after that is Bhayanashana, he destroys fear. Then we have Krisha, meaning very thin, and then Sthula, meaning very, which can mean very fat, very gross. Gunabhrit, who has qualities, and then Nirguna, which means qualityless. Adhrita, unconstrained, and Svadhrita. Adhrita means unconstrained or unsustained, and then Svadhrita, self-sustained. So what are we to understand from all of this? Well, nothing, is it? What do we understand? We understand that we don't understand because he's so great. One thing we should understand is that we cannot know him by our intelligence, however great our intelligence will be. But that ultimately isn't what he wants. He gives us Shastra, which introduces us to him on the intelligent platform, but ultimately he wants our love. We cannot know him by our intelligence, but we can know him by love. Bhaktya mama vijanati. And Krishna says in Gita, I can be known by devotion. So we can know him